Okay, we have the appropriate background music for Adam Vingan as he comes in. Because when Adam walks into a room, this is what you feel. This is the vibe that you feel.
Oh, yeah. Because he's Adam Vingan, baby.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic is with us, who is also a resident. He represents a lot of different teams, right? He's got the D.C. background a little bit, but he's a Saints guy. He's a Duke guy. So with the Saints coming to town.
So he's a front runner. That's what it sounds
like. Well, I didn't say that. He's just, he's an eclectic kind of mix of things. But he's also an Eastsider, so you know we've got that going. He's legit with that. So, Adam, with the Saints coming to town here, we were just talking about the matchup. Just before we segue into hockey, tell us your thoughts on this game between the Saints and the Titans on Sunday.
It's the Trevor Siemian revenge game.
Yes, it is.
And as Elijah was saying to me, our other fellow resident Saints fan, that any game could be a Trevor Siemian revenge game because he's been passed around the league quite a bit over the past several years. But it'll be interesting because the Saints defense is pretty good. They did not have a great showing at the end of the game last week against the Falcons when they came back from 18 down to take the lead in the fourth quarter. But then on the ensuing drive, the first play was like a 60-yard pass from Matt Ryan that set up the game-winning field goal. So we'll see how it goes. I don't have as high hopes as I did the last time the Saints were here a couple of years ago, but it should be entertaining. I'm planning to be there. My father is planning to be there. So it'll be a nice outing on Sunday afternoon.
Did Arlo get you tickets?
Arlo did not get me tickets, but Arlo is still riding the high of his first Duke win of his lifetime.
Well, I'm proud of him. I'm happy for him.
Yes, he and I have been rubbing it in Michelle's face for the past couple of years.
So, Adam, I was listening to Terry Crisp this morning on our morning show with Joe and Robbie, and Terry Crisp was talking to one of his former players from the Stanley Cup championship team of 1989, Tim Hunter. And when Terry went back to Calgary, when the team was up there and they had the Terry Crisp sort of guest of honor night to honor his retirement, which will happen at the end of the season from the broadcasting world, he had a lot of his former players there, and Tim Hunter could not wait to tell him about Tanner Jeannot. And in reading your article that you did for The Athletic, I got that same sense of enthusiasm from Tim Hunter, who coached Tanner Jeannot way back when he was a teenager at Moose Jaw. It's a great story.
Yeah, I really had a lot of fun putting that story together. And I had been meaning to write a story about Tanner for a while, sort of the origin story of Tanner Jeannot. And the first thing that I came across is the fact that Tanner Jeannot has two strength and conditioning awards named after him by two different teams. The Moose Jaw Warriors, his WHL team for 4 years, and even if you go back further, when he was just became a teenager, the Yorktown Maulers, a lower-level junior team in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, have a fitness award named after him. So I talk to people that know Tanner just about his commitment to physical fitness, and the stories I heard, you know, were really fun. You know, I spoke to the head trainer in Moose Jaw, who's been there now for close to 10 years, and he shared with me Tanner's fitness testing and training camp, and the numbers just pop off the page. You know, 200 sit-ups in his first year as a 17-year-old, 65 push-ups, 12 pull-ups. I don't think I could even do one pull-up, even if I'm, like, jumping and getting a head start that way. So, I think we've all learned to really appreciate the kind of game that Tanner Jeannot brings, but basically, you know, the point of the story was that, you know, when Tanner was younger, one of his first coaches was Jeff Odgers, who played more than 800 games in the NHL from the early 90s until the early aughts. And, you know, and Jeff told Tanner that, you know, when I was playing, I wanted to make sure that I was the most in shape guy at every training camp I went to, because no matter what happens, you will stand out because you will be the best, you know, the most physically fit player in camp. And that's sort of been Tanner's MO, you know, throughout his junior career, his early professional career, and now with the Predators. We see the hits, we see the tenacity, and, you know, he's built like a brick house. And there have been several players who have ended up on the receiving end of that, whether it's Jamie Oleksiak or Drew Doughty. It's happened to some big players. So I had a lot of fun, learning more about Tanner.
But this is the underlying theme that I pick up on, too. And as much as these guys loved him, Tim Hunter, he cut Tanner Jeannot. Tanner Jeannot goes on after they bring him back to the Moose Jaw team, and he plays junior. It's time to get drafted. He doesn't get drafted. So this guy has had to go the long way for everything he's gotten in the league. He keeps improving. That's what I really admire about his game, and I'm wondering what's next. So as you point out in the article, Adam, he's gone from being that fourth-line crash-and-bang guy who can chip in a goal. Now he's getting a chance to play even higher in the lineup with more skilled players. He has a great game in Dallas the other night. He's never really been on the power play, and I wonder how that will evolve in the coming weeks and months.
You mentioned the fact that despite being the top performer or one of the top performers in his first training camp in Moose Jaw as a training camp invite, he was cut. And Tim Hunter told me that a couple of days later he was watching the inter-squad game that the Warriors do to evaluate prospects and realized a couple of days later that he had made a huge mistake and called Tanner's parents and basically begged them to bring him back and told them, we're going to sign him to a contract. We're going to put him in a billet. He's going to be here with us all year and hopefully 4 years. And he was. And, the sky seems to be the limit. Trust me, there are a lot of cold takes you can find on Twitter by searching Tanner Jeannot expansion draft right now.
Big time.
And I will appreciate, and look, Jared Stillman is not one to admit that he's wrong. He will tie himself in knots to find a way not to admit that he's wrong. But even he yesterday said he's probably going to take an L on his, oh my God, they protected Tanner Jeannot over Kelly Yarncrow take. And that's saying a lot that Jared Stillman, of all people, is possibly entertaining the idea of admitting he was wrong. So that's growth. That's personal growth for Jared.
Good for Jared.
That's big. He's come a long way. Adam Vingan is with us from The Athletic. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of this team. So the back-to-backs, they beat Dallas 4-2. They beat St. Louis 4-3 in overtime last night and come back to Bridgestone Arena to take on Arizona. Matt Duchene has been part of the story, though, as he's now surpassed his goal total from all of last year in 34 games, I believe it was. But he's got 8. He had 6 all of last year. Distributing the puck, shooting the puck, doing all the things that you want him to do. Do you feel like that this is him truly? He has turned the corner. It's more than just a hot streak, that this can actually be sustainable with Matt Duchene?
That's a good question. And as Willie knows, I like to dig deep into the numbers to figure that out. And when you look at Matt's game so far, I mean, he's getting to the slot, more than most players in the NHL. I think when I looked at it this morning, I think there might only be 3 or 4 players in the NHL who have more slot shots on net this season than Matt Duchene. And I don't have his shooting percentage in front of me, but I don't think it's ridiculous. Sometimes you see guys get off to a hot start and they're shooting like 40%, and you know that that's going to regress. I don't think Matt is shooting the lights out necessarily based on shooting percentage. I think it's about average for his career. I really do think you've seen, a maturation as much as a 31-year-old player can mature in Matt Duchene. And I think John Hines said it best before the team left on the trip, that Matt did not have enough substance in his game last season, and now he does. And, to me, I remember having a conversation with Mike Johnson, who's an NHL Network analyst, like a year and a half ago for a story I was working on, and he made an interesting point. He talked about how there are maybe 15 to 20 players in the NHL top who are slump-proof. Someone like Connor McDavid, for example, who very rarely goes more than a couple games without a point, if any games without a point. Matt Duchene is not in that category. So I've been wildly impressed from what I've seen from Matt Duchene. To me, before I can finally say he has turned the corner, I do want to see what happens when the points in the pucks stop flowing, the goals stop flowing. I want to see what else he does, because I think that was the major or primary issue, I should say, with Matt last year, was that he was doing a lot of the things to create goals and scoring chances and wasn't converting on them. But he wasn't really doing much else to impact a game in terms of away from the puck and doing the little things that when a player, like think about Mikhail Granlund, for example, who's off to an incredibly hot start too. When Mikhail isn't producing, he's making impacts in other areas, specifically on the defensive end. Like, I want to see what happens when the goals stop going in. Is Matt making an impact in other areas? You know, the pass he had to Luke Cunningham, for example, that was an amazing pass last night. Does he continue to do that? Does he win puck battles? Does he engage in puck battles? Does he, you know, does he play solid defensive hockey? I want to see that. So I think his start is obviously fantastic. But I'm still waiting to see what happens when it stops being, you know, when this hot streak comes to an end, whether or not he continues to impact the game in other areas.
43 shots on goal and a shooting percentage of 18.6%, which is definitely higher than...
So a little high.
A little high. But he's hot, right? When it's hot. But he was been...
And it's not ridiculous.
He was always the one that was pointing out
40%.
It was way lower. And he was like, I've had bad luck. And people were like, well, he's just making excuses. But I do think there was some truth to that, right? And now the puck is starting to go in.
He has his confidence.
When he's shooting, you can tell, you know, he's shooting to score. And he's also making some great plays. Like you just talked about the pass to Luke Cunningham. That was a big, big play. He's a lot of confidence when he has the puck on his stick right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, is Matt Duchene an $8 million player? Probably not. But if he plays like this, that contract is a lot easier to swallow than it was last year and for most of the year before that. So, you know, look, Matt deserves a ton of credit. You know, he seems, you know, the one thing that I personally, you know, was, you know, I wouldn't say worried about, but the one thing that was on my mind last year was, is Matt Duchene fully bought into John Hines' vision for the Predators? I felt like of all of the top players on the team, just based on what I was watching, he seemed to be the slowest to come around. I feel like now he's on the two of them are on the same page. And look, some of it also helps that he's getting a lot more ice time, which he's earning, but he's also playing with more skilled players. He's playing with Mikhail Granlund. He's playing with Ryan Johansson. He's playing with Philip Forsberg. Last year, you know, after he came back from injury, he was playing with Nick Cousins. He was playing with Eric Halla. He was playing with Kalle Järnkrok. And with all due respect to those players, they're not of the same skill level as the Granlunds and Forsbergs and Johanssons. So I do think it helps, obviously, that his line mates are better, too.
You bring up Mikhail Granlund, 4 assists last night, which was a career night in that category for him. But I've been very, very impressed with him as a puck distributor. I mean, he's only got the 2 goals on the season. We know he can score 2, but you got to like the chemistry there between those two and how Granlund's been playing.
Yeah, for sure. And last night in overtime, he was looking to get off the ice, it seemed. He was holding the puck, you know, at center ice, thinking about going for a change. And then he just said, screw it, I'm going for it. And he and Matt Duchene, you know, hooked up on the game-winning goal. Yeah, he's been great. And look, we talked about Mikhail Granlund a lot since John Hines became coach. You know, he is John Hines' most trusted forward. I mean, if you were to take, you know, the game log for Mikhail Granlund from John Hines' first game as coach to now, you know, I imagine he's probably the top point producer. He's certainly at the top in terms of ice time per game. You know, John Hines, you know, trusts Mikhail Granlund without question. And when he plays like that, you can see why. And what makes Granlund, you know, such a good player is that sort of what I was talking about with Duchene when things aren't going in as much as they are. He does other things. You know, he's very responsible defensively. He forechecks hard. You know, when the Predators re-signed Granlund, you know, it was certainly a head-scratcher to some people. But it made all the sense from a team standpoint to have him back. And, you know, I really think he's playing well.
That's another sort of crossroads that they came to last year. Remember, there were a lot of people saying, boy, you should get something for Granlund. You're going to lose him. You can even wind it back to the year before. It looked like he was gone. He was gone for months. And then they brought him back last minute. Can you imagine all these forks in the road where he ends up coming back? John Hines is the guy standing on the table saying, thank goodness that we got him back because, like you said, Adam, I think that's the right term. He's the most trusted forward. To me, he's the word I use a lot, he's the glue, right? He's the guy that does everything. He's in every single situation. So I'm glad he's getting rewarded with points because you don't get anybody's attention for these little things unless you're getting some points. And so that's what's really nice to see. And it's not a coincidence that Duchesne's playing so well with playing alongside of Granlund. Those two play well together.
Yes, and I just remember, you know, the day of free agency, you know, as we were, you know, getting closer to the opening of the market, you know, I had heard that Granlund was walking, and then less than 30 minutes later, he had resigned. You know, I don't think
you were wrong. Yeah. I think it was, looked like he was gone, and I think there were some people rallying from within saying, I think both sides need to reconsider here. This is a good match. Let's get this guy back.
Right. He was very, very close to going to market. And the Predators and Granlund and his representation were able to compromise on something at the 11th hour, you know, before the market officially opened. So, you know, that's what I've been saying for the last couple of years. I mean, just think about the role that Granlund has had under John Hines. I mean, it's night and day. I mean, under Peter Laviolette, Mikhail Granlund was an afterthought. And, you know, that trade for Kevin Fiala, you know, seemed like a big mistake. And certainly, you know, Fiala's having a great career with the Wild, but I feel like Granlund is the type of player that this team needs in terms of the identity that they're trying to portray.
Adam, if you look at their games so far, if the Predators score three or more goals, typically they're winning the game. Now, there's a couple of exceptions, obviously the opener against Seattle and the Winnipeg game. But for the most part, if they get three or above, they are winning this game. And they've done this a lot lately without Philip Forsberg, who is on paper supposed to be, you know, their biggest weapon when it comes to offense. So what kind of pressure do you think that puts on Forsberg for when he is healthy and does come back to help them keep this up?
Yeah, I mean, look. The players that need to be producing are producing. Matt Duchesne is producing. Roman Josi is producing. Ryan Johansson is producing. Mikhail Granlund is producing. Juuse Saros is playing very well. You know, there are other players who are off the slower starts. I think you're starting to see Luke Cunnan get into a rhythm after a slow start. You know, Elie Tolvanen is off to a slow start. You know, Philip Tomasino has played solid for a rookie. But if they can get those depth players, you know, to follow that lead, you know, things are going to look up. But in terms of Philip Forsberg, you know, to me, and I had this conversation with Robbie and Joe the other day, you know, it's a really interesting case with Philip Forsberg because we absolutely know that he is a highly skilled player. And, you know, these injuries that he's been suffering over the past couple of years have been really unfortunate. Like, he didn't plan to run into Roman Josi, you know, in Calgary. It was a mistake, but
yeah,
it took him out of the game. And yeah, and we, you know, and we don't know when he'll be back. And, you know, for Forsberg, the timing probably couldn't be any worse when you consider that he's in a contract year and he made a decision to bet on himself in the contract year. It wasn't like Matthias Ekholm, who basically set a deadline saying, I want to be re-signed by the start of the season and we're going to table conversations until the end. So, you know, I'm really interested to see how, you know, these negotiations go. You know, I reported last weekend that they haven't started in earnest, and my colleague Pierre Lebrun reported the same thing today, but said that I think they're, you know, perhaps the wheels are starting to be put in motion. I think the most interesting thing is it's really hard to pin down a value for Philip Forsberg. Like, with Matthias Ekholm, for example, there were two contracts that I always felt like were the best comparables for Matthias Ekholm, and that was Jake Muzzin and Jeff Petrie. And he got the Petrie contract, which was 4 years, $25 million. To me, there is no obvious comparable for Philip Forsberg. And, you know, how he comes back and how he plays is going to play a huge role in this. But, you know, I feel like, you know, the Predators, you know, what they decide to do with Philip Forsberg is going to move this franchise in is going in vastly different directions. You know, so when he gets back, that's something I'm going to be keeping an eye on.
Adam, one last thing for you. And I think this is a big underlying theme in the identity that John Hines has built now with the, you know, a bigger, younger team. you know, with more sandpaper, more grit. It's the team that Milwaukee had a couple years ago when they didn't get a chance to play in the playoffs, but they dominated the AHL. But you look at the guys that are playing now for the Predators that were on that team. Trenin, Olivier, Jeannot, Novak, Carrier. There's like eight or nine of them when you really count them up. And for the most part, none of those guys were on big prospect lists, right? Corey Pronman, your colleague for The Athletic, does these prospect lists. You wouldn't have seen any of these guys on those lists. But that group collectively has gotten better. They won big together. I think they have a chip on their shoulder. It's kind of like nobody thinks we're any good. But they are providing a lot of energy. I think it's contagious. I think you ask reasons why Johansson and Duchesne are playing better. I think they've been influenced by this, you know, infusion of youth and mentality that those guys have. I think it's really tangible. I'm wondering if you're picking up on the same thing.
Yeah, and I think we could all pick up on it in the second half of last season. You know, there were a lot of injuries to key players, and that, you know, led to the rise of Tanner Jeannot and Alex Carrier and Jeremy Davies and Ellie Tolvanen and other players. And you make a good point. I mean, that Milwaukee team in 2019-20, you know, was a fantastic team. And, you know, certainly, you know, the fact that they weren't able to win a Calder Cup was certainly left a bad taste in their mouth. I know it, you know, it bummed the heck out of Carl Taylor. And then, of course, Milwaukee didn't play last season. So that, you know, that taste lingers in your mouth a little bit more. But I think you saw it last year. I mean, I remember talking, you know, to Matthias Ekholm and Nick Cousins, among others, you know, entering the playoffs just about the second half turnaround, and both of them mentioned it was the young players. I mean, they came, like, the Predators for the longest time had been a veteran-laden team. You know, whenever they would do the list, the NHL would do the list of the, you know, the average age of the opening night rosters, the Predators would be, like, the oldest team in the league year after year after year. But then the roster gets turned over, and now they're one of the younger teams in the league. And I think you're right, Willie. I do think that those young players, I mean, UC Saros, of course, played a significant role in getting the team to the playoffs last year. But right after him was just all of the young guys and then the enthusiasm that they infused into the roster, you know, and it certainly caught the attention of the veteran players who felt like they had to keep up with the youngsters. So I think you're seeing a continuation of what you saw in the second half of the regular season through the first month of this season.
Yeah, and more responsibility for those guys, with the guys like Eric Halla and Cali Yarncroke and Victor Arvidsson gone, right? There's more responsibility.
And Ryan Ellis. Yeah.
Ryan Ellis, for sure. So they have an even bigger influence, and I think so far it's been positive. Adam, excellent stuff. I hope a lot of people read the article on Tanner Jeannot. He's really the focal point of a lot of this theme that we're talking about. He's so fun to watch. And so I think they'll enjoy it even more when they read the backstory. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Go Saints.
Okay. Adam making friends, as he always does.
G-E-A-U-X. Go Saints.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. All right.
Adam Vingan, baby.
Time for you to talk.
It is
a
time.
Little bit of MGM.
Yeah, the BetMGM, to be precise. BetMGM. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, well, they welcome you with a special offer on the NBA. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on any game, and if either team hits a three-pointer, you'll win $200 in free bets regardless of your bet's outcome. All you have to do is use the bonus code 1025GAME200 when you make your first bet. Enjoy NBA action like never before with BetMGM's live betting options, boosted odds specials, and daily promotions at your fingertips all season long. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Use that code 1025GAME200 to win $200 in free bets if a three-pointer is made in the game you wager on. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Tennessee only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.